Hello, I am Emma, the 11th Duchess of Rutland, and this is Duchess, a podcast in which I explore the most historic homes of the UK and meet the inspiring women who lead them. As a daughter of a Welsh farmer, I grew up far away from the glamour and wealth of aristocracy, but my life changed forever when I fell in love and married my husband, the 11th Duke of Rutland. Suddenly, one of Britain's most historic buildings was not only my home, but under my care. I wanted to hear the stories of other women like me, the custodians of these great homes. So in this podcast, I will travel to breathtaking homes and meet the inspiring women who lead these estates today. Please join me on this special journey. This is Duchess, the podcast. Deep in the picturesque county of sun-kissed Devon is one of the UK's most unique manor houses, Powdram. With its unique combination of Georgian, Victorian and Gothic architecture, battlement towers, crenellations and lavish Rococo interiors, Powdram is quite an extraordinary sight. Like the vibrancy of its appearance, the estate also has a rich history. It is seat of the Earls of Devon. The Manor of Powdram actually did appear in the Domesday Book and has remained in the Courtney family for 600 years. I had the privilege of sitting down with Hollywood actress, the Countess of Devon, AJ. Together, we had a wonderful conversation of her acting career, the challenges of shifting from Hollywood to the British peerage, and her incredible plans for Powdram in the future. As a consequence of the UK lockdown, this episode was recorded remotely. I'm so excited because I've joined AJ today, who is sunning herself in LA. But when she's not in LA, her home is the historic Powdram Castle, and she has the title of Countess of Devon. So, AJ, as I hope you don't mind me calling you today, it's a complete pleasure to have you with us. Thank you.
It's good to be here, Mia.
So today we've got lots of exciting things we're going to talk about. And first of all, if I may, we're going to talk about your lineage and the history behind the family that you have married into. Because Powdram Castle, as I believe, is one of the oldest standing castles in Great Britain, with over 600 years of Courtney family history. Could you just give us a little insight into that Devon lineage and speak about some of those most famous people in your history?
It's interesting because history was never something that really grabbed me as far as a subject in school, unless it was about the people. And my husband happens to be an art historian, so he has a way into history through art. His family goes back to the Byzantine Empire. The castle was built in 1390. It's been through many wars. It was besieged twice. The Courtney family was also involved in the Wars of the Roses, where the Courtneys were on both sides.
And if you were going to look back at some of the ladies in your family line, who would you link yourself to and who do you have great affinity with?
I have the most affinity with my mother-in-law, even though we're very, very different. I just have fierce respect for her. And, you know, her how she managed it and how she brought her own interests to it, and she fought very hard for the things that she loved, you know, her horses, and they created an amazing world for their family there. And she's an incredibly generous and thoughtful woman. I also really connect with Venetia, who is Charlie's grandmother. She was very glamorous. She was married to the Earl of Cottenham at the time, who was a cousin of Christopher's. But he was a traveler and he was never home. And she was quite lonely with two young kids. And she had a mad love affair with Christopher when he was 21. So it was very dramatic, their relationship. And then they couldn't really be together until, you know, she got divorced and they got married. And we found in her desk, which was left completely undisturbed, a whole drawer of love letters.
Oh.
These were the love letters that started in, so 1938.
Wow.
So it started out with, where can we meet where no one will see us? And then it goes to, where can we meet where everyone will see us? It goes through, you know, her giving birth to Charlie's father in the state bed the night of the Exeter Blitz. Wow. I mean, could you imagine? I had like a home birth here in my, you know, with like my own birthing tub and I pre-labored in the pool. I mean, this woman is sitting in this bed while everyone else is in a bomb shelter. The whole house is blacked out and the bombers are going right over her head.
Wow.
What?
Unbelievable. And nothing to dull the pain.
No.
Absolutely nothing. Amazing. So just before you became the Countess of Devon, you were the daughter of an American couple. Tell us about your childhood and your parents.
My parents are wonderful people. They come from very different upbringings, which is a good parallel for Charlie and I. My mom was from the Midwest and was an army brat. And then my father's family was very fancy. They did really well in fashion and were in New York driving around in limousines and very flash. And my mom had never really worn clothes that her mom hadn't made for. And all of a sudden meeting this fashion family. And they were amazing. We were a very American family. I started playing baseball when I was 5. Played football too, because my brother did.
Were you a cheerleader or you were actually on the pitch?
With baseball, I played. And I played in an all-boys league till I was about 14. I was playing baseball and I injured myself and I couldn't play for a year. And I didn't know what to do. And somebody knew somebody who was in artist management and said, would you want to go on auditions? And I'm like, I don't know. So I just started that just to fill my time. And I loved it. I found that I really was drawn to why people are the way they are and why people do the things they do. And it felt amazing. And it felt like a lesson in compassion every time you did it. I worked for 25 years in film and television. I wasn't huge on being a celebrity. And so I did a good variety of shows. I was on every sitcom in the 90s, from Seinfeld to a show called Coach. I did a few films. My favorite was My So-Called Life, which was a coming-of-age show with Claire Danes.
You were also a and the press, of course, loved this because Countess, who was the former Baywatch Bay.
Well, the funny thing is that Baywatch wasn't even on my resume for the last, you know, 15 years. But I get that in England and in Europe, that was like the one. But I was never a Baywatch babe. One of my best friends was.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, I did a couple episodes on Baywatch and had a really great experience and a really quirky experience.
Well, as we well know, we both experienced that. The press love a headline. And everyone...
Where they can attach a picture of someone in a bikini.
Yeah, exactly. And I have to say, you look very good in a bikini. So AJ, how did you actually meet your husband?
My girlfriend was having a bachelorette in Las Vegas, but I wasn't going to go because I'd actually been very unwell. So I grew up dealing with what a lot of doctors like to call fibromyalgia, which is basically incredibly sensitive body that likes to express itself in lots of exciting ways. Anyway, my friend convinced me to go. So I went there. My friends just put some lipstick on me and I stood down at the bar and I looked across the room and this ridiculous man just smiled. And I was like, oh my God, I smacked my girlfriend and said, that one, yum. And then I saw him surrounded by all these pneumatic blondes and was like, oh dear, pretty boy. And he's very pretty. So I was like, I don't know. And then we caught eyes and smiled and all those things happened where your body just goes, ah. And yeah, it was pretty intense. And I'd been so single for like 7 years that my parents thought I was gay. Probably am. But
what was your reaction, AJ, when you found out that he was part of the British aristocracy? Horrified, I would imagine.
No, you don't. It just, it's like a breeze, you know, you don't know what to do with that information. You know, he didn't tell me anything about it. So his dad had done this to his mom, and he'd always dreamt of finding someone who didn't know so he could just drive him up the driveway and surprise him. And he's like, do you want to meet my parents? And we drive up. And yeah, it was just like, you've got to be kidding me. This is really
how amazing. What was your first impression when you saw it?
Oh, it's so beautiful. I'm used to California. And even when I traveled, I would travel mostly to surf destinations. And so driving into the Devon countryside, it's so lush, and the grass and the green and it was just so soft and like straight out of a novel. Very romantic. And totally ridiculous.
Oh, you see this beautiful castle, AJ, and you're sort of inspired by it, but you knew nothing about it. What's the reality here and now with you living in this slice of British history?
Reality takes it all in. So the reality is, it is extraordinarily beautiful countryside. It is an incredible story, the whole house, every room you walk into. Its role within the community, within the local society, its power as its presence, its potential is extraordinary. The day-to-day workings of it, it is incredibly challenging. Stepping into Powderham, whenever you're the outsider, you step into something that's been there for a very long time, and a lot of it has very deep and strong roots. So coming into that space, yeah, it was a lot to take in. I don't know if you really do take it all in. I think you just have to get on with it and go day to day. There's a massive responsibility that I see and I witness my husband receive, especially on the passing of his father. It was a huge shift. And I think that first year, I just kind of sat back and witnessed and held space for the shift for his family and Powderham as a community. And then we were in the center of the house as it happened.
You're so right. I remember just that first year of my dear father-in-law passing away, his younger brother saying to me, which looking back, so wise, he said, it will be chaos for the first few years. And you just have to relax because it'll all come right. We had to overnight understand tax, law, accountancy, death duties, you know, people coming in. I describe them as grey-suited individuals who'd arrive with their briefcases and tell us about the doom and gloom of our situation. And somehow we had to negotiate our way around.
Yeah. Luckily, I've always been someone who takes what's in front of me and does my absolute best with it. But I did lose myself in that house and learned that these houses can eat you.
Eat you up and then
yes,
spit you out.
Especially if you're conscientious. If you're conscientious, you're more susceptible to it because you just want to take care of everything. And then again, there was all the correspondence, and I get overwhelmed when I write letters. So I'm not as good at just writing quick letters and thank you notes and things. It's like, I feel too much. It's like my English side of our family, they spend hours at their desks and they do correspondence. And then I also had two young kids. And you are expected to be suddenly a specialist in every area. And I think, you know, that was difficult. I mean, the linen cupboard. There's a lot of hoarding that goes on in these houses when you have so much space to keep things, you know, going around. I mean, really, the first few years were just cleaning stuff out. I mean, we had probably the last 60 years of the history of Tupperware. And I couldn't believe, I mean, just how much space there was. I mean, it was a truck full. And then, you know, my husband has difficulty letting go of anything.
That's so true. Do you think that's something because of the fact that they've grown up in these buildings?
Yeah. Absolutely.
That they cannot deal with change. I mean, I completely agree.
Because no one had lived in the castle for 5 years before we moved in when his father passed. And the only cleaners were a couple generous guides who offered their time to help clean pretty much just the spaces that the tours were going through. So the layers of dust and clutter were really intense. And I think it was just survival mode for those first couple of years. And then coming in and bringing a whole modern angle wasn't necessarily welcome. I mean, I walked into Downton Abbey, and with full respect, you know, people live their lives the way with everything they've learned. And I think the biggest obstacle was feeling alone, was feeling very isolated. My husband became the Earl. I was still AJ, and my kids were still my kids. and he kind of disappeared into the architecture. And that was a very difficult time where even just trying to make the house feel comfortable for us, you know, it was like I couldn't move anything on the walls. And I wasn't able to have boundaries, healthy boundaries. And I saw my mother-in-law raise her voice and battle for everything. And she's so strong. But I wasn't at a point where I could battle. I didn't know it well enough. I fought for what I believed in, which was building community, giving our family some grounding. I made a huge priority to connect with women in my community, and they showed up. And a lot of times it felt pathetic that I was just always having such a hard time and they were just coming to rescue me, or coming over to take me on a walk to get out, or coming over to grab a flashlight and find their way into the underbelly of the castle and like remove me from the Tupperware.
But it's very hard to talk about that to friends locally because one doesn't want to sound just a spoilt madam. And many people looking in, they think, goodness, what is your problem? You've got a wonderful house, a handsome husband. Get your head round it and get on.
So there is a thing of you don't want to be seen to be whining. And that's a very dangerous thing. And it's much more prominent in English culture than it was in the culture I grew up in. I mean, I found an outlet in acting that all of my emotions were welcome. They weren't just welcome. They were my superpower. Like, that's what I did. I could get angry on a dime. I could express anything. I could tap into grief. And then to go into English culture where being angry is like a shameful quality, especially as women. No one teaches women how to express anger in a healthy way. It's considered ugly. It's considered inappropriate.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I wasn't brought up to be selfless. I wasn't brought up to be dutiful. I was brought up to be authentic and to listen to my voice and to use my voice and to be empowered, you know?
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you mean. What about your as you have famously described him, your hippie feminist husband for 10 years, where did he go? And do you sort of transform him into being more grounded?
Well, there's an authentic part in him that really recognized something in me. And that was the most important thing. And I still believe it is. And that's what will take us through this and help us keep reforming. And it's that working partnership that is the priority for us right now of like, how does this work? Knowing what we know now, because I did take on the running of the business and development and instilling values. And yet he wasn't able to let go. And it's like, you have to respect the enormity of what he's inherited and his path with it. And that's been something that's been challenging because my husband is in charge. He's running it the way he wants to run it. He owns it outright, which is different than having a trust. So he feels this tremendous sense of control and responsibility and an inherited fear of being the one that screws it all up.
I know that's so true. We can't really, as the women that marry into these families, really understand these children that were born to know that they were going to inherit the title, to have the responsibility one day. With Charles, our oldest son, when he was 3, he was obsessed with being Spider-Man. And I said, "Dying, why do you want to be Spider-Man?" He said, "Because, Mummy, he could climb up the walls of this castle and fix it in a jiffy." And it really made me want to break down and sob because I thought this little boy, who's 3, is thinking about the responsibility of this building and I have to do my utmost to make him be free. And to be free of the pressure and of that intense responsibility. So he doesn't come into it feeling burdened, but feeling joy.
I have friends that run family businesses that totally relate to the challenges that we have. It just has a more extensive or more dramatic story. But the human experience and the challenges of running a family business, generational issues, just practical issues of how to keep a business relevant, how to take a business that's never really been run sustainably. So it's just been selling capital for the last 3, 4, 5 generations. So finding a way to create sustainability is something I think a lot of businesses are working with right now. And it can be very isolating being in a business like that. And the most important thing is for each woman to have her own tribe, to be able to define your tribe.
What impresses me so much about AJ is not just her achievements, but how supportive and strong she is. I admire so much her ability to support her husband, despite all the challenges of these estates. You've been listening to Duchess, the podcast presented by me, Emma Rutland, and produced by One Fine Play in collaboration with Beaver Castle. I really wanted to hear AJ's thoughts on another Hollywood actress who's been thrust into the British nobility, Meghan Markle. But first, I wanted to learn more about AJ's plans for Powderham.
When I first moved into the castle, my mother-in-law took me into the linen room when she was showing me around. And in the linen room, there was this enormous big black box full of nitrouses for babies. And I looked at it and thought, oh, that poor Duchess, she must have had hundreds of babies. And I said this to my mother-in-law and said, oh, the poor woman. She said, oh, no, it wasn't that, darling. What happened is the family were looking after their community and would hand a nightie out to everyone on the estate who had a child. And then when they had finished with the nightie, it would be laundered and returned to the big house. Mm-hmm. And what it made me really begin to understand on my journey here is how much we were the social security for everyone on our estate. So there was no social security then in the UK. But if you lived on a big estate and the family looked after you, that was very lucky for you because they made sure you were fed, you had a nightie for children. You were a big family. And I don't know about you, but that's been a real journey for me, understanding that, number one. And secondly, finding out how we do that in our time. Because we have to make these estates commercial and viable, and we have to get the rents in from our properties to keep the roof on the building. But there's this immense need and expectation that we do still look after our communities. Have you found that at Powderham?
I think that every generation finds their way of connecting with community. There is a very strong culture and a lot of expectations as far as supporting the community to us at Powderham. And it is a balance to find because you can end up feeling the need to please everybody all the time. And it's important to keep it connected. So what we've done is focus on our family values, which were sustainability, inclusivity, community, authenticity, and then adventure.
Wow.
And the most important goal for me, the long-term goal, is to prove the sustainability of putting health and well-being at the base of a profit-making business.
And you've actually been incredibly proactive and already been in the Houses of Parliament holding up these flags of what you truly believe in. Tell us about that, AJ.
Well, I'm working with a man called Andrew Pennington, who I met at the round table in Parliament, who is a genius and a great friend. And he is a health inequalities researcher. And what we talked about in Parliament was we need to be able to quantify social purpose. We need to be able to quantify social benefit. So if we're making an offering for inclusivity, how does that work as far as an economic plan? And then now that COVID has happened, we find that the importance has come down and met us. The importance of inclusivity, of being able to get to everyone and being able to quantify the benefit of these things is the beginning. Because it's going to happen. I was brought into Apple to facilitate courses in community building for their creatives who have turned their focus from product placement to facilitating community. Because that's what they see is the future of sales. Facilitating community means that people are going to come back, they're going to come together, they're going to come more often. When people have an experience that makes them feel good, they're going to want to come back. So when I got to Powderham and I see this incredible space and I feel what it does to my body, I came up with a strapline to facilitate health and happiness through connection with arts, culture, and community. And that's the opportunity I see that these houses have with their beautiful gardens and seeing how people come alive. If you come to Powderham, the joy of showing someone the secret passageways, or not showing them, but letting them find the secret doors and lead the way through. going up the old staircase and into rooms that are filled with treasures. I don't care how messy it is, it's still magical. And then bringing in the arts, like you walk into the American Garden and I see Midsummer Night's Dream happening in there like nobody's business. And, you know, we did Gay History of Powderham and bringing in the LGBTQ community, which Devon is known as like the gayest county in England. So getting together with the partners to create access when we have such a gay history at Powderham that can be really grounding for a lot of people. And a lot of what we've done at Powderham is not thinking up an idea and sticking it in. It's really seeing what's already growing there and what really has roots. And this being a sanctuary, the green space, I mean, England's a very small country comparatively to what I've grown up with. And these spaces are so precious and it's so beautiful and abundant. And these houses are so magic. There's a lot of wonder about them. There's a timelessness.
I always think that there's a sense of stability, that it's been there for so long that actually what they do is, particularly in these very challenging times, they make people think it'll be fine. This castle has survived 1,000 years, so we'll get through this. Mm. It's that sort of sense of it's here and it's very stable. So presumably, AJ, what you're saying is that maybe COVID is really fast-tracked what you're about to do at Powderham, because obviously the mental health of individuals and families.
Yeah, a lot of healers and a lot of people who meditate have usually gone through something very difficult. And they've gone to Western medicine and they haven't gotten the answers and the support that they needed. And they've had to look alternatively just to survive. Mm-hmm. And when I started doing yoga in the castle, it started out with a few people. And all of a sudden, it just drew more and more people. And those kinds of things, once people try it out, and all of a sudden you can have more fun. And meditation and staying grounded and centered, that's some of the stuff you do just to be able to enjoy life.
Well, I have to say, and I haven't actually told many people this, but I had my own mental meltdown moment about 5 or 6 years ago and had to, as you're saying, reach deep to find ways in order to get myself back online, and found through meditation, and actually I'm studying to do Reiki healing. So
amazing.
Again, these houses have this amazing way of testing you as a human being. And when they do, you just have to reach a little deeper and it'll be there. It's wonderful to hear your story. And I think if we had more mental health being dealt with in stately homes, in the grounds and in the surroundings, and yoga in our ballroom. I love that concept, AJ, and what a great thing to take House of Lords. Mm-hmm. So well done you.
Yeah, and how many people are dealing with really serious stuff right now?
Yeah.
And we've had a lot of COVID in our village and it's affecting everyone. So people who've never dealt with mental health issues are now dealing with them. And the more that people who appear to be so confident and have it all together, no one has it all together all the time. We all need to support one another. And these houses do provide such an incredible playground for health and well-being.
Absolutely. And when you're talking, AJ, so much of the journey of your life becomes so obvious as you speak. You know, that tomboy girl who was the cheerleader, who was playing baseball, who then went on and became an actress, has brought that passion and all that articulation and that huge ability to communicate to this extraordinary pile of heritage. Mm. And that's what is pure magic for Charlie and for Powderham. And that's sometimes what's forgotten, because we can get so taken in by the bricks and mortar. And actually, it's the energy of the souls. And that's what I believe we put into these houses as women. We put our soul.
Yes. And it's also a survival mechanism. It's just like Charlie's in England right now and I've got the kids here and we're in lockdown and they're both homeschooling. And I can spend the entire day in the kitchen cleaning and cooking and cleaning and cooking and cleaning and cooking. And then their bedrooms cleaning and then trying to get them to empower themselves. And you can get lost in, you know, the to-dos. And I think the most important thing is to really take time to connect with your wheelhouse, what your superpower is. Because if I'm not spending time connecting with people, and collaborating with people.
Well, you die, and like the house that you've moved into, your soul just diminishes, doesn't it? And so,
it can really suck the life out of you.
And I do remember the late Duchess of Devonshire, who I went to for guidance and advice in the early times of being a duchess, said to me, "You must always make sure you run it," meaning the house or the castle, "and it doesn't run you." And I think that's the wisest advice, because you can just go around the house and not leave it for a week if you're not careful. Because it's like a village. It's like living in a village. There's always so much to do. There's so many cupboards to clean and clear. And you have to shut things off in your mind. I'll come to it when I've got time. I mean, there has rather unfairly, I don't know what your thoughts are on this, AJ, but you have at times, there has been comparisons of you with Meghan Markle, I guess because of your acting background. Do you have sympathy for Meghan and everything that she's been through?
I have sympathy and empathy for any woman who has taken on such a challenge. But Meghan, I knew way back for her work in Social Purpose. She'd caught my eye before, you know, anything happened. We grew up in the same valley, and obviously we're in the same industry. But to be that young and that sure of herself and her purpose to connect and to heal was something I identified with very much. And you fall in love with this person. You know, I didn't fall in love with a castle. I didn't fall in love with an earl. I fell in love with his eyes and his smile and his heart and his mind. You know, I give the benefit of the doubt there, that this woman has a purpose that was there before English royalty claimed her, to do good work with this life, to heal, to connect with people. And I believe that that is the motivation for the decisions that they've had to make. But, you know, again, it's not for me to project, but I do feel that I would definitely have her back.
Oh, well done you. And how far would she be from you in LA?
Oh, I don't know. She's probably not that far.
Oh, there you go. I hope she's listening, and maybe I could come and interview her one day as well, because well done you for being so loyal and supportive to our kind. So as we begin to wind this magical conversation that I could go on with for hours and hours, my golden question to you would be, if you were sitting there in the sunshine today thinking about Powderham Castle, all those responsibilities that are now yours, what would you say as a woman to the countesses six generations before?
I can't imagine what they went through. I can't imagine their situations. You know, the fact that so much has happened in the last 50 years of the women's movement, my goodness, just, it's going to change. Women are going to be free. Women are going to have some authority over their lives. Yeah, I would just give them faith that the United States of America was going to have a black female vice president in the year 2020. Would be pretty revelatory.
So true. And then my very last question today, AJ, is what would you say to your ancestors six generations in the future?
Oh my goodness. Be healthy in all ways. Be true to yourselves and honor what's come before, honor what's coming after. And my friend always ends her yoga session saying, may we be healed and may we be a source of healing in this world.
We've got to do that, and you're showing the way. So we all take our cap off to you, AJ.
Great things
have come from America, and you would be one of them together with blue jeans. So thank you, AJ, for your time today. I can't wait to meet you in person and come and see Powderham Castle. Now, how do we go online and find out about how to come and see you, when to visit?
Powderham has a great website. Keep checking in and keep an eye on us, and we'll keep updating with progress. I think the more people that share their homes and spaces for the purpose of resilience and coming back after this crazy COVID experience, the better. I don't think Powderham has to be the only example. I think these houses will find their place in the present.
Certainly will.
Yeah.
And they're very lucky to have you. And what a joy it has been talking to you today.
Oh, thank you so so much. Your support and acknowledgement and your voice and everything about you is very reassuring to me and inspiring.
Well, you have my £150,000 worth of support, and you're a very special girl. Keep kicking on.
Thank you. I will. I promise.
God bless you.
You too.
Throughout this podcast, I have been introduced both in the past and the present to so many amazing women. And I have to say, AJ is an absolutely inspiring woman. I have to thank the Countess for her openness, her strength in making this stand, for being so candid and speaking about all those topics that we really struggle with, and for her calling for them to be brought out of the closet and into the light. And also, I'd like to thank her for bringing a bit of that glamorous Californian sun to the podcast. Thank you, Countess. Indeed, thank you all for joining us today. Next week on Duchess, I will be talking to a dear friend of mine, the Duchess of Argyll of Inverary Castle. The Duchess explains her connection with the iconic Ethel Margaret Campbell. Eleanor opens up about her incredibly rich family history, and we discuss how having such an important title can actually impact on your own personal identity. Couple of quick notes before we go. Important ones. Make sure you subscribe to Duchess the podcast so you get automatically notified about new episodes wherever you listen to a podcast. I want to know about you and what you think of the show, so please be sure to send me your comments and tell me about your own lineage and the women who have inspired you in your life. Please write to me on duchess@duchessthepodcast.com. And if there are any stately homes in particular you'd like me to visit, do send your suggestions to me as soon as possible. I've started a newsletter that includes all this and more and comes straight to your inbox. It's really easy to sign up at duchessthepodcast.com. You've been listening to Duchess, the podcast, presented by me, Emma Rutland, the Duchess of Rutland, produced by One Fine Play in collaboration with Beaver Castle. From Beaver Castle, Lady Violet Manners is the executive producer. From One Fine Play, James Bishop is the executive producer. Kasra Ferruzia is the audio and visual engineer. Connor Foley is the editorial producer and researcher. Additional creative support from Selena Christofies and Theo Banner. Thanks for listening to Duchess, the podcast.